May it please the Court, Josh Vinson on behalf of the plaintiff, Titan Tire Corporation of Freeport. This case concerns Section 302 of the Labor Management Relations Act, which makes it unlawful for an employer to give anything of value to an employer or labor organization that represents the employer's employees. And specifically, the dispute in this case centers around Section 302C1, which creates an exception to that general prohibition. That exception is for compensation for or by reason of the services of the employee as an employee of the employer. Parties in this case, the subject, what we're dealing with here, the crux of the issue is that the arbitrator and the district court have ordered Titan Tire to pay the full salaries, the full-time salaries of the local's president and the local's benefits representative. And it's our contention that that is an unlawful violation or a violation of Section 302.
I just have a preliminary question, and that is the company's paying to the union, as I understand it.
That is correct. What they've been doing is, initially they were paying them directly on a paycheck and payroll basis.
And paying a similar amount to the union.
Then they stopped, yes.
That issue, as I understand it, is not really before us, whether or not that's a good idea or illegal or anything else.
Well, actually, I think that's just as unlawful as requiring to pay them directly.
That's what I want to clarify.
Yeah, no. And you know what? That's really, I think, when you sort of sift through the arbitrator's decision, I think what he's saying is that if it's illegal to pay them directly, then you can't, wash that out by simply paying the union so that the union can pay it. That's still delivering something of value to the union who is representing your employees. And in this case, it takes the form of the full salary of the president and the benefits rep. So you can't whitewash it by, doing it. Paying it to the union.
The collective bargaining agreement does call for this kind of a payment, doesn't it?
Well, you see, no, it does not. Now, and I want to break this up, because I think there's a different approach depending on which union official you're talking about. If you look at the union president, there is no provision in the collective bargaining agreement that says he's going to get paid a full salary or anything. All there is in the collective bargaining agreement is a no-docking clause. The no-docking clause says that if an employee with a regular shift gets called away from his shift to go attend a grievance meeting, and that's almost verbatim what it says, then that employee will get paid. But there's nothing in there that says that the company is going to pay the president of the local his full-time salary when he's providing no work. He has no regular shift. He doesn't fall within the provisions of that no-docking clause. There's no other provision in the agreements anywhere that say that the union president is going to collect full-time pay for working for the union.
Okay, full-time. So your position is that all of that is hinged on the no-docking clause, and that's it?
That's exactly right. I think that that's the crux of the error with respect to the arbitrator. He must derive the essence of his decision from the contract and be interpreting it. There's no provision in that contract that says the president gets full-time pay. It's a no-docking clause. It's a fringe benefit that any person who's a machinist on the floor or whatever, if they're working the line and they get called away from their regular shift, that's the concept. You're not going to get dinged for having to go do this. That's completely different than saying we're going to pay somebody who's doing no work whatsoever on a leave of absence, has no regular shift, and is going to get paid full-time to work for the union.
But that may be right, but to the extent that we disagree with the arbitrator's interpretation of the contract, we have a very deferential standard of review. So this really comes down to this public policy argument under 302.
Absolutely, you're right. If it's an unlawful, if his interpretation results in an unlawful result, then you owe him no deference whatsoever.
Right.
And that's what makes it unlawful is the fact that the contract, we go to Toth. Okay, and I do want to draw a comparison here because one of the points that I think, that the union has a valid point, the benefits representative, different story. There is a benefit agreement that does specify that the benefits representative will get paid 48 hours. The company will compensate that guy 48 hours a week for his activities. So that's a little different scenario. Two totally different contracts, different result. Although in the case of the benefits representative, I have a further argument on that. But going back to the point of what decision controls in this case. The union and Titan are in agreement that the court's decision in Toth from 1989 is the controlling case. And Toth, in grappling with this very issue, was dealing with this question of, you know, what does that language mean? Compensation by reason of services as an employee. And the court drew distinctions certainly between pension benefits, pension contributions, fringe benefits, a no-docking clause, we know from the Second Circuit, falls within this type of language. And the formula that Toth came up with was, number one, if you're going to fall within this language, it's going to qualify as recompense for past service. It's got to, number one, it's got to be in the agreement. It's got to be collectively bargained for and present. It's got to be there. Now, we have that with the benefits rep. We do not have it with the president's pay. All right? The second thing is there has to be a vested right to it, okay, while you're an employee. That's what creates that causal connection that satisfies the by reason of language. And in this case, certainly, neither of these men, either the benefits representative or the president, had any vested right to be paid full wages for no work.
No, when they were vested right in benefits, for instance, well, something is, I'll call it relatively minor, is seniority versus payments into either a 401k or some kind of retirement. Is that vested?
Yes, that's permissible, because once you go on the leave of absence and you do become a union official, the court finds no problem with continued accrual of seniority, continued pension contributions, continued eligibility for health benefits.
But those are the kind of things that we think of as being vested by virtue
yes.
of a collective bargaining agreement. We don't think of salary. You don't have develop a vested right to be paid a salary.
When you stop working, that's right.
Right. So I'm not sure that part of the Toth case maps onto this case very well. I mean, this really addresses the reserved question in Toth at the end of the opinion.
If you know, you got to sort of put this together, I think, with Judge Alito's dissenting opinion in the Caterpillar case from the Third Circuit. Because what he did is he tied the Third Circuit case, Caterpillar is the one that deals with this question of full-time pay for no work and whether that violates 302. And the majority goes the union's way. But in dissent, then Judge Alito cited Toth for the very point that I'm arguing here, that Toth correctly analyzed this from the standpoint that full-time pay for no work is not the kind of vested benefit that we're talking about that passes muster under the exception, because when we're talking about that vested benefit, we are talking about things that, you know, to try and describe it, what Toth was saying, are less likely to cause undue influence between an employer and the union representative. I mean, it's one thing if they're going to go to work for the union and, okay, they worked for the company for 20 years and they're going to continue to get their pension contributions and their health plan, and that's fine. Those are relatively minor in that sense, fringe benefits, because proportionality is a concept that's very clear in Toth, proportionality of what that benefit is. But when you move then, and this was Alito's point in his dissent in Caterpillar, when you're now talking about the kind of thing that Toth refers to as something that's totally incommensurate with the past service, when you're talking about paying someone full-time wages for not performing any services for the company at all now you're in violation of the statute. That's completely out of proportion to whatever they did in past service for the employer. I mean, it's one thing to say your past service earned you and the collective bargaining agreement provided for continued accrual of seniority, pension, and so forth. It's a completely different matter to say that once you go on a leave of absence and become a union official, that you still get to collect your full-time pay for doing no work for the company, because that creates the opportunity for undue influence between the employer, who is now fully funding your wages when your responsibilities are totally, and that's the arbitrator's determination here, and that's a key point too.
Yep.
The arbitrator did say they work solely for the union.
Right, that's a factual finding that gets deference. But holding here that this violates Section 302 would, I think, put us squarely in conflict with the majority in the Third Circuit's case in Caterpillar.
No, I don't think so, because the collective bargaining agreement in the Caterpillar case actually did contain a provision that said that you will get full-time pay as the union president. It was actually included, which is something that is completely missing here. Now, is it possible that you might step on a toe in the Third Circuit on this? Yes, but I don't think that that would be improvident. You know, there is a pretty strong dissent in that case.
That distinction again. You said that what was it? It was in the CBA that said you can pay them full time.
Yes, yes, and that's the issue that Toth dealt with, and why Alito sided with Toth is because he said you can't just contract away illegality. So it's either illegal or it isn't, and that's where I think you could step on the toe. But the fact is, if you want to harmonize the cases, you can harmonize them by saying in Caterpillar, the contract did expressly provide for full-time pay to the union president. That was in the contract. In this case, they don't have a clause like that. All they have is a no-docking clause. In fact, Caterpillar talks about how the CBA was amended to expand that provision to include full-time pay for the union president.
Well, speaking of cases that would have to be harmonized, we have the Ninth Circuit's case. B.F. Goodrich.
That fits as well. In B.F. Goodrich, the distinction between this case and that case is that there was a finding of supervision and control over the union official while he was in. Not only did he stay in the plant full-time in his office, unlike our case where the guy is only there 8 hours a week part-time, but the court found that he was specifically under the employer's supervision and control. Now, that's a different case. That's a finding there that he actually was the employee, still the employee of the employer.
There was a CBA provision for full salary in that case, though, so we don't have the Toth distinction there.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't remember that detail, but I will say that the cases are decided really on different aspects of the 302C1 exception.
Right, I agree with that.
You know, B.F. Goodrich was fine. He's a direct employee. He was under their supervision and control. There's no finding here of that sort. I mean, the arbitrator's decision, as we just discussed, says plainly, these guys work solely for the union, and that's all they do. The benefits rep, I do want to point out, even though the benefits agreement provided for some compensation to him, unlike the president, that, too, is not a vested right that he had while working as benefits representative to be paid full-time for no work. And it is grossly disproportionate. I mean, that is the kind of thing that the Second Circuit in the BASF Wyandotte case and Toth both said that you can't have. You can't create a contract that says you get full-time pay for no work. That creates the sort of problems of undue influence between the union and the employer that 302 is designed to prevent. We would ask that you reverse, unless the court has any further questions. I'll save what I have left.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jury.
May it please the Court, I'm David Jury on behalf of the United Steelworkers. Counsel for Titan, in his argument, I believe, used a turn of phrase to the like that his argument would step on toes in the Third Circuit were he to make it in Philadelphia. But, Your Honor, respectfully, counsel's argument steps on toes in the Seventh Circuit as well. Titan, in its argument, we believe, fundamentally misstates and misapplies Toth. So as a result, Your Honor, we think it's important to reorient this court to what the panel actually held in Toth. In Toth, a case involving an ERISA action brought when U.S. Steel unilaterally rescinded a leave policy, the court wrestled with Section 302, noting that Section 302A has a general prohibition against making payments to union representatives, while Section 302C1 authorizes or accepts payments as long as the payments are in some way motivated by past services. And then in giving meaning to that notion of payments being some way motivated by past services, this court in Toth stated that one obvious instance where the payments are motivated in past services, or where those payments are made pursuant to a collective bargaining agreement. That was the holding in Toth. That was the holding in Caterpillar. That was the holding in the other cases we've cited, CTS from the Northern District of Indiana, Bell Atlantic and the District Court in D.C. And running in a thread through each of these cases, Your Honor, is the analysis that began with the dissenting opinion of Judge Becker in the Trailways case in the Third Circuit. In Trailways, the company argued, and the majority in the Third Circuit held, just as Titan asserts here in its briefs, that payments are lawful where they are made in relation to past services actually rendered, something I believe we, in our brief, describe as being akin to a back pay argument. The dissenting opinion in Trailways was written by Judge Becker, who criticized that approach, who instead contended that the by reason of clause in Section 302C1 authorized payments where they're pursuant to a collective bargaining agreement. A couple of years later, this court heard Toth. This court criticized the Third Circuit's opinion in Trailways, declined to adopt its analysis, instead wrote favorably about Judge Becker's opinion.
Now, he was focused on mostly on benefits, though, wasn't he?
Excuse me?
He was focused, as the precedent, on benefits as opposed to for past services.
In Trailways...
I'm just using the quote out of what they did from the Third Circuit. Talk about take leave of absence, have a right to reinstatement, for instance, retain their seniority, payment into the union's pension fund. He's referring to the same benefits that your opponent is trying to distinguish away from full payment of salary for no work.
Your Honor, it's true that in Trailways, the specific dispute related to the employer's cessation of pension credits. There's nothing in Caterpillar, there's nothing in Toth that suggests that the rationale that supports the Seventh Circuit's opinion in Toth and the Third Circuit en banc opinion in Caterpillar is limited only to pension benefits, but rather it embodies, Your Honor, an observation that this court made in Toth and an observation that many courts have made in Section 302 litigation, which is that Congress in Section 302 intended to outlaw payments, intended to outlaw actions that it would have the tendency to bribe union officials while also leaving the parties free in collective bargaining to have some leeway to bargain around issues of common concern.
I think that's right, but I think it's incorrect to argue that as long as the payment in question is embodied in a collective bargaining agreement, it's okay. I don't think that immunizes it. I think you're over-reading that language from Toth or reading it out of context, because the opinion does address itself toward the end of the analysis to the precise situation we have here, which is full salary for no work. Or no work on behalf of the company, anyway, on the employer. It's work on behalf of the union, which distinguishes this case from, well, I don't know if it distinguishes it or not. That's a delicate question from the Ninth Circuit or the Third Circuit. But,
Your Honor,
apart from that, just taking
Toth
at face value, I think you're overreading that language.
Well, Your Honor correctly notes that towards the end of the opinion in Toth, the circuit notes that the Second Circuit in the BASF Wyandotte case had observed that a no-docking case, which the no-docking issue was at stake in BASF Wyandotte, would be different from a case where an employee was placed on full-time payroll without ever having performed any work. In closely reading BASF Wyandotte, the Second Circuit's opinion, I think two things are important. First, because it involved a no-docking clause, which involves otherwise full-time employees being paid for sporadic time spent doing union business. The Second Circuit in a footnote noted that it was not at all passing upon the application of Section 302C1 to former employees. And Titan contends here that the two union representatives are former employees and the district court so found. As a result, in closely reading BASF Wyandotte, where it said it was not passing upon what would happen if the parties would retain an employee to be hired full-time, that's not what's going on here. Here, instead, we have a local union president elected by the members of the local union at the facility. We have a benefits representative whose position is a product of the party's collective bargaining agreement, taking leaves of employment, leaves of absence from employment, leaves that are specifically addressed in the party's collective bargaining agreement, leaves that entitle them to continue accruing seniority, to continue receiving the other benefits, collectively bargained benefits provided to the bargaining unit employee, leaves of absence that allow the employees to return to the bargaining unit once their tenure of office terminates. A different circumstance, Your Honor, than the one we believe the Second Circuit had in mind in BASF Wyandotte, where it spoke to the instance of an employee who was simply placed on payroll.
Right. All that does is say it was a reserved question in the Second Circuit, just as it's a reserved question here in the Seventh, by virtue of the language at the end of the Toth opinion. The point is that these are former employees. They're not performing any services for the company. And they're drawing a full salary from the company by virtue of the provision in the collective bargaining agreement. I know there's a dispute about whether the union president's compensation is covered in the CBA, but the arbitrator construed it to cover his salary as well as the benefits representative's salary. So we have a question that really was reserved in both of those cases, addressed more directly by the Third Circuit in the Caterpillar case. So the holding in Toth about the collective bargaining agreement being one instance that falls within the exception, I think needs to be understood in the context of the facts of that case, which really did pertain to benefits, you know, seniority accrual, pension benefits accrual, et cetera, and not a full-time salary for no work, which is what we've got here. So I'm not sure it gives us a whole lot of guidance.
Your Honor, respectfully, I believe Toth does. Again, in describing Section 302.1 and the exception, Section 302.1, this Court, again, found that the exception applies so long as payments are in some way motivated by a collective bargaining agreement. Counsel for Titan contends, both in his briefs and in argument today, that then-Judge Alito's dissent in the Caterpillar case is the Third Circuit opinion that's more in line with Toth. That, we believe, is an incorrect reading of Caterpillar. Indeed, in reading Caterpillar, when the en banc panel in the Third Circuit overruled Trailways and adopted the rule in Caterpillar, it cited the opinion in Toth with approval, as well as the opinion of the 11th Circuit in Phillips, and I believe the 2nd Circuit in BASF Wyandotte. There is a thread that runs through Toth and Caterpillar, a thread that began with Judge Becker's dissent in Trailways, and it is a thread that authorizes payments when made by a collective bargaining agreement. As the 7th Circuit pointed out, and again, this is a principle that also runs through the cases, is that where the benefits are in an open collective bargaining agreement, the union and the union officials are subject to accountability. If it's open, if it's subject to review, if it's subject to ratification, which was the case here. I just want to get to the point about whether or not the local union, the benefits, the continuation of wages to the local union president is covered by the collective bargaining agreement. Indeed, it is, Your Honor. That is what the arbitrator found, and under basic principles of Section 301 from Enterprise Wheel and MISCO, this Court's to defer to that finding, a finding based upon past practice.
It was an interpretation of the no docking provision?
It was an interpretation of past practice, but it was also, there's more to it. Titan notes that there is a no docking provision in the collective bargaining agreement. However, that is not the end of the story. The testimony from the arbitration case was clear that the party's collective bargaining agreement writ large consist of a number of agreements. A collective bargaining agreement, a benefits agreement, which is Titan concedes is the agreement that provides for 48 hours of pay to the benefits representative. There's a supplemental unemployment benefits agreement. And then there's a document that's called understandings outside of the agreement. It is a collectively bargained document that by its own terms is stated to have the full force and effect of the labor agreement. It states by its own terms that disputes relating to the union leave provisions are subject to the grievance and arbitration provisions. It is a collective bargaining agreement. And in that agreement, Your Honor, it provides, it describes the manner or the means, the circumstances in which amounts may be deducted from the bank of hours allotted for union business, and it includes hours for the local union president or his replacement's time. It's a provision that goes beyond simply no docking, but instead it goes to the president's time. It also has a provision for other hours authorized by the local union. So a fulsome understanding of the party's collective bargaining agreement would not stop simply with reading the no docking clause of the CBA, but it would also include this understandings outside of the agreement document, again, which is a collective bargaining agreement.
I would like to focus just another minute on Caterpillar, because the distinction between compensation for or by reason of, which of course is what I consider the tripwire here in this case, and the Third Circuit may be derived from the analysis from Judge Becker, but it says that every employee implicitly gave up a small amount in current wages and benefits in exchange for a promise that if he or she should someday be elected grievance chairperson, Caterpillar would continue to pay his or her salary. That's invented. And that's what bothers me here. That this comes up with some kind of a unwritten thing that everybody who's working for Caterpillar thinks someday they may be in this benefit. Therefore, that justifies how or by reason of says you can pay full salary when they don't work. And I don't see that connection.
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't believe that that's an invented analysis.
But it's a pivot point. They got their pivot foot on that principle.
I don't know whether it's a pivot point in Caterpillar. It certainly was important in informing the Third Circuit's opinion. That thought, that analysis that every employee implicitly gives up something in exchange for the promise that if he or she's later elected to receive the benefit, that idea runs through a lot of collective bargaining. There are myriad cases in this circuit and elsewhere about retiree insurance cases, and oftentimes plaintiffs seeking to enforce retiree insurance obligations, bargained obligations, make the point that the employees gave up something in exchange for some future right. That's a common way of thinking about collective bargaining, where it involves matters just simply beyond the immediate wages and benefits of the employees covered by
everything
the
agreement. Everything is a give and take, sure. And it has to benefit both sides. That's how you come up with bargains, and I can understand why the company would look at this in some ways and say, well, that gets us off the hook. We don't have to, we got two people. We don't have to bother with whether they worked this time and, took time off doing this or that. Maybe that solves a problem that the company didn't want to bother with. It's your two out of, 750 employees or
That's correct.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's why I looked at Caterpillar and said, because they really did get back to Judge Becker and talking about benefits, but then came up with that sentence that seemed to be very important in justifying or by reason of as being the authority for equal pay.
I recognize Your Honor's comment, and again, in our experience, it's a typical way of thinking about benefits and collective bargaining. Thank you. The union asked that the court affirm the decision below.
Thank you. Mr. Vincent, how much time? You have 3 minutes in rebuttal.
Judge Mannion, I think you put your finger right on it. This is a case of statutory construction at bottom. It's a case of statutory construction, and the issue is what does that by reason of language mean? And in terms of what authority is more persuasive, I think the decision in Toth clearly took that question of statutory construction much more to heart, and I think the Caterpillar decision the language that you touched on is invented. And I think that's the whole point of Judge Alito's, then Judge Alito's dissent. He obliterates that point in a very, I think, persuasive three-part analysis that makes it, I guess, at bottom line, the way it comes out after you read his analysis is the only thing that the employees gave something up for was the right to have a benefits representative. That's what they gave something up for, arguably, but they didn't give something up so that if they would someday become the benefits rep, they would suddenly collect full-time pay for no work. Those are two completely different things, and that's, I think, the most troubling part of that Caterpillar rationale, and that's exactly what Judge Alito went after.
It's easy to conceptualize traditional benefits like a pension plan, a health plan, et cetera, in that way because it applies universally rather than to the fortuitous occasion of one's election to a union position.
Judge Alito says, you may become eligible someday to become the benefits representative who collects this, but you certainly didn't get the vested right to collect full-time pay for no work.
If I'm not mistaken, the Supreme Court granted cert in the Caterpillar case, and then the parties settled it?
That was my note right here, is that cert was granted. Now, the other thing I'll point out is that the union had an identical case to this one that they lost in a district court in Iowa that went to the Eighth Circuit. And you can still hear the oral argument on that one. I think Mr. Jury was involved in that one as well. And they voluntarily dismissed that case. Identical case. It's involving Titan Tire. It's Titan Tire versus United Steel, United Steelwork, or U.S., whatever it was, the name of that union now. It's gotten very long. But that one went up, too, and there was that one disappeared as well. So
that was settled at the Court of Appeals level, not the Supreme Court? Or
no, at the Court of Appeals level.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, it's one of these things.
Before an opinion came out, is that what you're saying? It was argued but dismissed before an opinion came
correct.
Out?
Correct. Mm. Correct. So it's like one of these.
Yeah, I hope you didn't have the opinion written when that happened.
We hate it when that happens.
Capable of repetition but evading review, I think, is the phrase that attaches under these circumstances.
Well, there was no circuit split at the time of the cert grant in Caterpillar, so far as I understand. Or was there?
I would agree with you. I don't really think there was any kind of a direct split, but you know, certainly obviously the court was very divided, and you could say that there was some conflict, I think, with that between what Caterpillar did and BASF Wyandotte. I mean, that case did talk about time pay for no work. Why? So, yeah, we would ask that you reverse. Thank you for the court's time today.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel for excellent arguments. The case is taken under advisement.